shoots, scores! DK wins it for an end round!
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is your host, Gavin. And earlier this week, might even been on Wednesday. Today is Friday, of course, probably Saturday when you are listening to this. We posted an episode discussing Decision Day, discussing kind of the end of the season. It was myself and Chase giving our thoughts on that. And the plan was to try and get everybody on, but Adam wasn't able to make it there. Daniel wasn't able to make it there. So we couldn't get all the takes, all the good conversations in that one episode. So instead, what we did is I scheduled some time with Daniel as well to kind of get his thoughts on similar questions. We might stray to different conversations as Daniel and I usually do, but definitely still wanted to get his take on this kind of end of season run-in, and Adam still isn't available. So not sure about that one, unfortunately. So, Daniel, first and foremost, welcome to the pod again. And how are you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. Pretty good, all things considered. You know, it's the end of the week, so it's the weekend, and I'm happy, you know?
Yeah, and you get to talk some Orlando City, your favorite club in the world.
Indeed.
They don't frustrate you at all, right?
No, not one bit. Not one bit whatsoever.
Right. Well, what I started with is asking Chase about the end of season run-in. So the last time we talked to our listeners was Philadelphia 5, Orlando City 1 after the Open Cup final win. So the games that came afterwards were the 1-0 home loss against Atlanta, the 4-0 win against Toronto, the 2-1 loss in New Jersey against NYCFC, the 4-1 loss in Miami, and the 2-1 Decision Day win against Columbus. So not sure if you want to talk about anything specific in that run of games, but I want to get your thoughts overall, and feel free to go into specifics if you want, but I want to get your thoughts overall on kind of how this team ended the season.
They stuttered over the line, really. I mean, those results are inconsistent. You know, it's you know, with all the respect to, you know, to Toronto, I mean, you know, the Orlando kind of lost to anyone that was relatively good, you know. So got my words mixed up there, but I mean, it's a tricky one because we've all seen, you know, the Open Cup win. It's a trophy. You know, I'm a big advocate for trophies. I don't care if it's the Milk Cup, you know, or if it's a giant cup made of chocolate. It's a trophy. It's something that you have to build on. But what I wanted to see after the Open Cup was the momentum carried on. And you would argue that against Philadelphia and Miami especially, they didn't really compete, you know. They laid down and they took a defeat, and it was really poor to watch. Like, it seemed like the players kind of went on their holidays just after that cup win. You know, and Atlanta came to town. They played a good game, deservedly won. Moment of magic. You know, and you can't really say that, you know, they certainly deserve to beat Toronto, but I think the rest of the games pretty much went the way they should have done, with Columbus probably feeling a bit aggrieved as well. So it wasn't a really great end to the season. I mean, I don't really celebrate, you know, grabbing seventh place in the playoffs. You know, it's a strange mechanism having seven teams from each conference go in the playoffs, because in my mind, you shouldn't really be getting into a playoff unless you're like maybe top four or something like that. So the seventh is kind of like a consolation spot, you know? It's like a hand-holding by the league, trying to make some parity and trying to keep a few more games interesting to the end of the season. I don't take much glory from finishing seventh. So how do you feel about that, Gavin?
Well, with the parameters that exist today, like, obviously everyone league-wide thinks a playoff spot is a successful season. So I think maybe I've fallen into kind of the, okay, we made playoffs, so At the end of the day, like, we had a successful MLS campaign. You go into the history books as making the playoffs. We finished seventh in 2015, but we didn't make the playoffs, so it wasn't considered a successful season. So I see what you're saying. And I think I largely agree with it. I'm not happy that we finished seventh at all.
Yeah.
Like, that position, based on the players we have, the money invested, the position we were in for a lot of this season, I'm not happy where we finished. I'm happy we finished inside the set limit to make the playoffs, but I'm just not, like seventh is, it's not good enough. And like last year we finished sixth, and it's like, we always feel like we're good enough to push for Supporters Shield at the beginning of the year, but, and you know, we go, you know, 7, 8, 9 games in, and we're in those top three positions, and we're thinking, okay, could be a good year. And then we finish and we're scraping by, and it's starting to become kind of a theme. So yeah, I'm definitely not happy with the way the end of the season kind of petered out for us.
Yeah, I'm like that. I mean, it's like eventually every spot in the league will be a playoff spot, just to keep people interested.
Well, we're kind of in that next season. We have that tournament. Every single team from Liga MX, every single team from the United States is in it. Which, I mean, that there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, like, everybody's in.
That tournament is only going to be a success though if the MLS allows some roster mechanisms to be changed, because MLS rosters in their current state, with the exception of a couple teams, are not equipped for, you know, a 34-game league season, possibility of playoffs, an Open Cup run. Orlando has the CONCACAF as well, which I would say they're probably going to get 3 or 4 games at least. So, you know, and maybe more if they do well. But, you know, you're looking at a possible, what, 50-game season, potentially?
I think someone did the math. I saw a tweet on it. It was the max a team could get if they go all the way in Cup, MLS Cup playoffs, go all the way in Open Cup, go all the way in Leagues Cup, and the regular MLS regular season, I think was 55. And I don't think they even counted CCL in that.
So,
But there's very few teams that would qualify for CCL and then something like that. So, like, yeah, it's a lot of games. I think you're right. MLS roster rules need updating. I think that they've needed updated for the past 4 or 5 years now. And I think there are rumors of a fourth DP spot. And if a fourth DP spot were to come, I think they would update the salary cap maximum. And they would have to. I think I put a tweet out about that on MLS Now podcast account. Yeah. There would be no way financially for there to be 4 DP slots and then still have a really good team, because so much money would be in those 4 star players. The rest of the team, you'd have to have a bunch of Kyle Smith, like not to, you know, kill the guys, but like, we'd have to have a bunch of like Kyle Smiths and like Generation Adidas draft picks, and that's how you would build a successful team, and then your 4 star players would carry you. That's not the type of league I want to go to. So you're right that the roster rules need updating big time.
Yeah, it's I mean, it could potentially be good for the league, because those bottom feeder teams that don't like to invest are going to be forced to. They're going to be under some sort of societal pressure to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I think fan bases are not going to tolerate just being there, just being present in the competition, only to, you know, to get their asses kicked, you know, and be there. Perennial losers, you know. You know, this is going to come into the debate later, I think, about what makes a good fan and what doesn't. Because I'll tell you now, as a sports fan, I'm only looking at how you can do better. I'm not looking at, you know, accepting mediocrity, acting like a beaten victim, and being grateful for what I have when I feel like there's just so much more out there, you know. I think a lot of teams, you know, are going to have to push, and there's a lot, you know, you could say San Jose probably haven't invested much. There's Colorado, famously shrewd as well. you know, teams like that are going to have to kind of up the ante a little bit and spend a bit more. And that brings me right back full circle to Orlando and the squad. And I think the Open Cup does mask, you know, especially with these last few results, it does mask the deficiencies in the roster big time.
Let me pause you, because this is something that I don't think we've had a conversation on fully, and maybe we should. How much do you think Open Cup impacted our season? Like having those competing on two fronts sort of thing.
I told you that in my tweet I posted last week. I said that they sold the house, let the house go so they could have the nice Ferrari in the drive.
Yeah.
You know, the nice sports car. That's pretty much how I feel about it. I mean, I put a tweet on today as well saying that, you know, why Pro Rail won't work over here. Like, I accept it won't work. I wish it could. But the reason being is that the American concept of individualism and having a trophy and the status that comes with a trophy is always going to override, you know, any particular issues a club's going to have in its first adversity, you know?
Yep.
And that trophy is always going to stick out. There's going to be the certain, we'll just leave them unnamed people that will hang on to that trophy for probably the next 10 years as justification as to why the club continues to underperform. And I feel I'm not going to disrespect Oscar Pereira because he's done a decent job objectively. But, you know, he got a little fortunate in the cup with the way the draw always, you know, dropped to the home team.
Mm-hmm.
Finishing off with a USL team in the final. I mean, he benefited as well from a little bit of fortune, you know?
Well, within the games themselves.
Yeah. I mean, just to penalty shootouts and stuff. Yeah.
Go down to 10 men, still to get to the penalty shootout.
Mm-hmm.
The ball hitting off Michael Halliday's face. I mean, Miami could have stunned us in the last second of extra time, or overtime. Yeah, it was a very lucky season overall, but I'm looking at the schedule here.
Yeah.
So, like, interestingly enough, I think it did have an impact on the season, right? So
I mean, the home form is testament to the impact it had. I mean,
yeah,
I saw that statistic that they have like was it 9 wins at home, 8 losses, something like that, or is it the other way around?
I think it's 8 wins, 8 losses, 0 draws.
8 wins, 8. So they played 16 at home, then not 17, right?
Oh, it might have been 9-8. It might have been 9-8, yeah.
I know there was not a single tie, I know that. So, I mean, you know, I always look at, when I look at any football team, you know, I think, well, the question I ask myself is not what recent results did you get, but I ask myself, what is it this team does that you can build on and that you can improve, or that they have in them as a characteristic that can continue to progress? And I just think that they don't have a playing style that I feel confident with, and I think it was shown up in these last few games, you know. It's a conundrum, because I've the last team I saw that, you know, that managed to win a cup and yet was terrible in the regular season was Wigan Athletic when they won the FA Cup. But when got relegated the following week, you know, and they haven't come back from that. You know, they've never come back. They've never recovered, you know. And another example I can point to is Swansea, who, you know, in contrast, developed a style of play in Division 2. Worked the way all the way up to the Premier League, ended up finishing like top 8. Got a Carabao Cup in there. I mean, they had some kind of sustainable style that worked for them, that involved the graduation of players from youth and some shrewd signings. And that's the sort of thing I want to see in the MLS and with Orlando. I don't want to see this, you know, this week to week thing where you're just like hoping for a tie, maybe get lucky enough to get a win, but playing some awful football in the process, you know?
Yeah, and I think we can, we're going to kind of stumble on that topic as well in just a second here, but I do want to kind of go through this kind of exercise talking about how the Open Cup maybe did impact our regular season form. So I'm gonna just list out some results before and after our Open Cup games.
Mm-hmm.
So before the Rowdies game, we beat Columbus in 2-0, but then lost to Red Bulls 3-0 at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so what is that? 1-1, right? So then pre and post the Philadelphia Open Cup game, again, 1-1. Montreal loss, win in Toronto. Pre and post the Miami Open Cup game, draw, loss. So now we're 2-1-3. And then pre and post the Nashville game, loss, loss. Mm-hmm. So 2-1-5. Pre and post the New York Red Bulls game, loss, loss. 2-1-7. The final, pre and post the final, win, loss. So 3-1-8 surrounding these Open Cup games. I think that's a good enough sample size to say that the Open Cup definitely had an impact on our regular season form. How much does that worry you for CCL next year?
Well, it worries me because they've got their eye on the trophy, you know, just like a guy that moves to a neighborhood is bored with his marriage and starts looking at the nice female neighbor he's got next door. I feel like that's what Orlando's going to be doing next year, is keeping an eye on those trophies and ignoring what they got at home, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know where I get these analogies from, but that's the only way I can think about it. I think it's going to have a big impact. I mean, can they expect to do it again next year and win another Open Cup? I'm not sure they will. I think a lot of things would have to go their way for that to happen. I don't think there's much of a chance of winning the CONCACAF. I'd say less than 10%, probably.
Less than, like, 2%.
Yeah. So, is this team, the question we have to ask is this team capable of focusing? And is it technically good enough over a 34-game MLS season to make a dent in the supporters' shield and ultimately, you know, get the home playoff tie and try and get the MLS Cup? And I'm just not sure it is. I just don't see the initiative, I don't see the flair, I don't see the creativity to sustain over a 34-game season. In a cup games, anything can happen. And if you're more motivated on the day, then you can beat anybody. But in a 34-game season, it's just a lot different. It doesn't work like that. And, you know, when you think of the travel, you think of the three-game weeks, there's going to be a lot of those three-game weeks, by the way, the way this season looks like it's going. So I think it's going to have a very detrimental effect. I think that the club has to prioritise the league and has to look at these cup competitions as a developmental thing more than a serious way of contention, because I don't think they're going to win a cup next year. I think more like they've got to improve that league form, because at the end of the day, that's your bread and butter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're right. Well, you were kind of stumbling on a topic that was going to come up later, but let's just bring it up now. And it's kind of, I put a tweet out about it. Chase and I talked about it in the last episode. So I'll summarize it really quickly for anyone kind of listening again. Basically, performances versus results, and Pareja being a case study for how you individually as a fan, prioritize those two things. Do you prioritize performances and maybe even a path forward, kind of like what you were talking about with Swansea, or maybe a good comparison would be a Brentford over in England as well, who have kind of
good one actually. I risen forgot up to mention them.
From being like a super smart club, or do you just want results? Like, do you want to win? Like, as long as you win, like, you're happy. I know where you stand on this, but what is your thought on this kind of case study that Pareja is almost like building here? Not on purpose, obviously, but this kind of argument or a discussion that pops up, this debate.
I think that, again, you just got to look at the way the team carries itself. And if this team was sweeping teams aside with free-flowing football and had a stellar home record, like 14, 15 games without defeat at home, you know, then I think you could argue that it's going in the right direction, because that's something you can really build off and you can improve and you can kind of count on. But we don't have that. We don't have the fear factor. I don't think any team's scared of coming to Orlando. You know, I think they know what they're going to get. And, you know, they're going to get a team that, you know, for whatever reason, just crumbles extremely easily when it's under pressure. You know, that has to lie with the coach. You know, we can make the argument all day long that the coach has been there 3 years. But he's had 3 years. He's got his players. You know, he had a pandemic that helped him the first year. As far as getting, you know, getting into the MLS's back and limiting the schedule, you know, isolating the teams that they could play, you know, to being a lot of weaker ones that were also going through a difficult transition. You know, 2021, he kind of scraped into sixth place, fell at the first hurdle in the playoffs there. You know, 2022, we stumbled into the playoffs on the last day of the season. So he's got his players. He's had, he must have had, you know, what, 70 to 80 games now as a coach. Actually more than that, right? I think 34. He's probably over 100 games. So I don't know. Like, it's the performances have to be the indicator for me, because that's what carries you forward. The process is what always carries you forward. Just like if you buy a car, you could buy any shit car and it can get you across the country if you're lucky, but a good car will get you across the country several times. And that's where they need to be looking at, is the process.
Yeah. The one thing that's bothering me at the moment is there's no progression in the team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, excuse my language, but it feels like same shit, different day. Every game,
yeah,
you know, it's the same kind of formations. It's the, and I'm not expecting him to change the formation every game. I'm not saying that, but same play style. That we're not seeing improvement. We're not seeing, oh, this is an issue. Let's try and stop that issue. Like, it's just, there's not a lot of clear progression. There are small things here and there, right? So first season, really bad at set piece defending. Second season, not that bad. Third season, we didn't struggle on set piece this year at all, really.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe another example is we were starting second halves really slow, always conceding right after halftime. Really frustrating. Did we do better on that this year? I think a little bit, yeah. Not amazing, but a little bit. Now, what we struggled with...
I'm on our way, really.
That's... Yeah. But this year, I would say we struggled to hold leads, mm-hmm. right? So that's like, maybe we're getting better in one facet, but then we get worse in another. And it's just like, there's no like improvement. In fact, there's been, if you look on paper, we've gotten worse, fourth, sixth, and seventh. And so I think that's where the frustration lies with me is, I feel like performance-wise, we're going backwards. It's not fun to watch. Yes, we got the trophy. Absolutely love it. Maybe getting to that trophy is what hindered the season and made it such a hard watch. Like, is that the sacrifice that we had to make? Maybe. I don't know. I don't think next year, I don't see next year just being this brand new year where we're scoring mm-hmm. three goals and having free flowing football and just everything works now. Like, no, we're going to have CCL. We're going to be on fighting multiple competitions again, and we have the same coach, and it's going to be hard fought, gritty soccer, and we're going to get lucky bounces that go our way, trying to win on the margins. You win some, you lose some, and I mean, how much do you think you can have I would love to hear your thoughts on what I just said as well. But how much do you think maybe my frustration or the fan base's frustration this season comes from our home form itself?
I think that's a big source of it, because you want your team to be strong and you want it to be a representative of what you feel like as a supporter, you know? Like, you have this vision in your mind that, you know, you're a strong supporter, you're loyal, you're tough, and nothing's going to knock you down, sort of thing. And then you go to your stadium and you get trounced 3-0 and have one shot on target, and it happens every week, you know. And it's almost like a, you know, it hurts the pride of a supporter for sure. but it just what concerns me is the lack of initiative at home. That's the one place you need to be a little more brave and a bit more bold and try and attack. And as you said, it's the same shit, different day. We have not really improved on that. You know, the home form is just as, you know, it's just as poor as it was, what, 2 years ago, and it's marginally better than 3 years ago. So there's not really any...
You know, oh, I see what you're saying, 2 years and 3 years ago, I see.
Yeah, like, it picked up. I mean, you can't... Mm-hmm. I don't count 2020, I'm sorry. Like, I hear a lot of... I see a lot of Orlando fans, especially with the Philadelphia fans, trying to invalidate the supporter shield that, you know, that Philly got in 2020 because of the COVID. Yeah, the same people will point to MLS's back as some kind of major milestone that Orlando achieved that you cannot take away from them. It's like, well, on one end, 2020 either counts or it doesn't, right? If you're going to validate your MLS's back tournament, which was played in a fucking Disney World, literally, you know,
yep,
with squads, you know, that, you know, had half the star players missing because of restrictions and illnesses and all this other stuff. Yeah, you know, you're going to validate the MLS's back and say, well, oh yeah, well, no, it's definitely legit because we made the final and we worked really hard. Fine. But Philly got a supporter shield that year, so how is their victory not legitimate, you know?
It's, so in my mind, no, it's definitely legitimate. They played the same number of games as everyone else.
But we're talking Orlando City supporters on Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
So logic is not something that we're very used to. And neither is admitting when, you know, something is. You know, it's like, let's invalidate that because we want to, but we'll make our success more important than it actually is. I don't count 2020. 2020, in my mind, doesn't exist. Okay? It was a season that was put together, and it was a patch. It was like one of those patched up quilts that, you know, you had holes in it everywhere, and you fixed it with whatever you could find, you know?
Put some gum on it, put some duct tape.
It doesn't count. To me, it doesn't count. I don't think, I think I probably even said at that point, like, I wouldn't look at Oscar during that year, and I would have given him 2021 as a proper season to see who he is as a coach, you know? Because there's so many mitigating circumstances that, you know, you can't think about. So, I don't know. It's a really tough one to assess, but, you know, I think we kind of strayed away a little bit there, getting onto the 2020 part of it. But 2019, there was some progression. I mean, Orlando did make the US Open Cup semi-final, if you remember.
I do remember we played like garbage in the semifinal.
Played like garbage. I was at that game. Yeah, they played pretty poorly in the semis, but, you know, they did have some good performances at home in the league that season under, you know, James O'Connor, who I probably shouldn't really be mentioning his name right now, but I have to do it for this.
Yeah.
But but there was some sort of progress there, and then it all just kind of fell apart towards the end of the year, which I think that kind of sits in the memory of many supporters as well when you're talking about the home form. So it's like a curse. Like, you've got to lift it together. Like, you've got to have the fans, the players have all got to be on the same wavelength and just trying to lift it up, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Home form's been a struggle for me as well because
You're not going to do anything. If you can't make your home a fortress, then you're not going to succeed.
Yeah. And I think I said that at the beginning of the season when we were starting to see signs that it was an issue, maybe like post-Cincinnati game or something like that. No, I was really upset after the Atlanta loss. To let your rival come in and just win like that, and we were just so – the word I used was pathetic. We were pathetic on the night. We were awful. Like, it was just like, what are we doing? I was not happy after that game. But let's realign here. Let's get back to kind of topic at hand. I want to get your thoughts on the Columbus match. We don't have to go too deep into it, but specifically wanted to hear how you thought the match went and, you know, maybe some of the first half issues and then some of the big moments of the game. Want to get your thoughts on that. So first thing I want to ask about is Moutinho at center back instead of Smith, which I think is the first time we've ever seen him at proper center back, obviously forced due to injury and suspension, and looks like some distrust of Smith at center back. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that lineup selection from Pareja.
Well, Moutinho was drafted as a center back by LAFC, you know, and he was a standout player, you know, coming into the super draft in that position. So, I mean, when Orlando signed him, I do remember the press release, you know, seemed to reference that he was a center back as well. So, I mean, it's certainly, I thought he played pretty good. I mean, given the pressure of the match and being a playoff position on the line and his first time there this season, I think he actually did quite well. And, you know, one thing I've always said with Moutinho is that he plays like a midfielder, but that's because I think he's actually quite comfortable on the ball. And I like that in a defender. I feel like when Janssen doesn't play, the defence loses that composure. You know, I don't think they've got anybody who can handle the ball at the back like Janssen can. Like, he just knows how to pass it, you know? Break the lines. Moutinho didn't quite do that, but he was comfortable. Like, he didn't really feel with Moutinho that he would lose the ball in a stupid position. You know, and I think he did okay. I mean, you know, Smith being at left back instead was a bit of a surprise. It certainly does open that discussion again as to bringing in a left back, a second left back to the team, because I don't think Smith would have played had there been one available. So Smith's not really impressed. You know, he's impressed sometimes this season, but I think in the last month or two, he's certainly not been as effective, you know. It's a case of needs must with Smith going in at left back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I remember a day when Chris Mueller played left wing back, so it's not, so it's not, you know, it's not something that's completely alien, you know.
I thought Moutinho was pretty good at center back. He did a decent job. Yes, I have to admit, even though I am a big fan of Kyle Smith, I can also admit this season's been pretty poor from him overall. So, I liked the Moutinho selection. I think it was the right selection. Chase had a similar take, saying he thinks a lot of it was down to his ability to, like, pass the ball deep and, like, instead of have Smith and Schlegel next to each other, have someone who can at least, you know, handle the ball well, like Moutinho can. What's your take on the struggles in the first half? I mean, we went 1-0 down. We had played so bad, people were ready to say that's the season over. We're not turning this around. We're awful. Like, how did we win Open Cup? Blah, blah, blah. What do you think was going wrong for us in that first half?
We didn't get Facundo Torres into the game enough. That was the problem.
Yeah.
You know, and they're very reliant on Torres. I think if he's not on the field, then Orlando becomes a bottom half conference team very easily. Like a rooted bottom half conference team.
So like a Chicago.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately. Because you need that. He's just needed so much. Like, there's just so much pressure on him to perform. I think Angulo certainly been a good addition, and he did okay. Mauricio is very hot and cold, I think. And it was really down to those three. I mean, you know, you need to get those guys on the ball, particularly Torres, because he's the only one that I think gets the ball, and teams think, well, they've got to double up on him. They've got to make special arrangements for him, and that will then open up space for somebody else to take advantage of, which is where Angulo's doing pretty well. So that was just the key. It was just not enough ability in the midfield to get the ball and to hold it and to give it to Torres. I mean, you know, I had a discussion with Eddie, a brief discussion about Junior Urso, and, you know, me and him are very opposite on Junior Urso. You know, he's a very big fan of him. I don't mind him, but I'm not a great fan, and one of the reasons being is just that he'll come in a game like this and he'll score, but in his role in the midfield sometimes he doesn't quite provide that link between the defence and the attack that I want to see in a midfielder.
Urso?
Yeah, I said it
the other night with Chase. I was really frustrated with him this season because of that, actually.
Yeah,
he's not very good in that aspect of the game, and I do think it hinders us
Mm-hmm.
in being able to build attacks in general.
It's like I would. I'm looking at the team just as we speak now. I have the lineup and the graphic on my screen. And, you know, it's a 4-2-3-1. I mean, I just think that, you know, Mendes had the captain and partnered him with Araujo, this. Sorry, it's me trying, a Yorkshireman trying to pronounce that. Dreadful. I'm just going to call him Araujo, and if anyone wants to trash me, they can, whatever. But anyway, had he been partnered with Mendes as a legitimate double pivot, I just think Mendes would have been a better fit for what we're discussing right now. Because Mendes was very good at getting the ball in tight spaces and being able to distribute it. And that's where I think Ozil lacks, and I think that's where the transition with Orlando does suffer at times. Is that they'll do all that work sometimes to get it back in defence, and then the midfield too cannot get it to that final third. Or if they can, they can't do it quick enough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I just wonder. I wouldn't be surprised if something happened between coaching staff and Mendes, or behind something happened, I think, with Mendes behind the scenes. Maybe it's just as simple as we spent big on Araujo and in his position, and he just couldn't get his confidence up after that. But like, or maybe this move was in the making for the last 6 months. 6 months before it happened, but like he was one of our best players last season.
I know, and then he just falls off the map, and it's
And
like.
this season, people were surprised that he wasn't starting. Araujo gets brought in. Araujo's really, really good. I'd say he's better than Mendes, so like I'm not that mad about it. But I was really excited because it was like now we have Mendes, who was really good last season, Urso, who's like a solid option, and then Araujo. So like we're gonna have a good solid rotation, and then we shift off Mendes, and then we start Urso every match of the season, and come the end of the season, he's starting to look poor again. Like, I think part of it was down to MLS rules for why he left, but like I wouldn't be surprised if there was something behind the scenes there.
Yeah, it just doesn't make much sense because
It doesn't.
he's a good player. Like he's a very, you know, good sort of ball winning type distributor, and I think, you know, he was let go for peanuts. I mean, that was probably his contract situation, but you know, he went for 300,000 in MLS Monopoly money. You know, so you
What did
didn't
we
even
sign him for?
they paid $2 million for him, I think. Like US dollars. I think it was about
Was it
two
really that
million.
much?
I think so. Let me see what transfer market says, but
Well, if so, that's horrible business.
yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like I think they paid about 2 million for him, or somewhere in that region. I'm gonna see if it says it here or now.
I think you might be right.
Yeah. Cause I remember they signed him, it was one of the first pieces of business they did after 2018. Like pretty much he was through the door the week after the season finished. You know, and I'm trying to figure out now how he does. I don't use this website. Here we go, transfers.
Y'all didn't know this, but Daniel and I went through a little IT session before the episode,
We
and
did.
obviously he needs another one here if he doesn't even know how to work Transfermarkt.
Yeah, true. I'm not into spreadsheets, you know, like I'm not one of those people, but it
Oh,
doesn't
I'm
have the
way
fee
into
listed here.
spreadsheets.
It has it as a question mark, so
Oh.
it was a cop out, but their market value for him is 1.65 even right now. So I mean, I don't go purely off this website because it's not, a lot of it is speculative, but there is no transfer fee. It's going to bother me now. I'm going to try and find it. Yeah.
Well, we'll hear you typing away for a little bit then.
Like that bloody Kermit meme, typing away at the keyboard.
Yeah,
You know,
definitely.
we'll figure it out. But I think it was around 2 million. I'm pretty sure it was in that range.
Pretty bad. So your take on the first half basically is we didn't get the ball to Facundo Torres well enough.
Not well enough, not quick enough. You know, we don't put our attacking players in the greatest positions to succeed, you know? And it's like, you know, the team is not quite good enough to play out the back, but then there's no sense in just launching it forward either, you know? So your middle ground has to be, let's get it into the midfield and try and build progressively. And we can't do that quick enough. And that's the problem. And then when it comes to us playing against teams with a high press, I mean, we saw what happened a few times this year with that. So that's the problem. That was where it went wrong with Columbus. I know Columbus has had issues all year with holding on to the lead. Like, if they'd have won even half of the games that they dropped points, they would have been comfortably in the playoffs this year. You know, probably looking at a, you know, fourth place and a home tie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they had this issue, this mental block, where they just can't hold on to a lead. That played into Orlando's favour. I knew that was going to be a factor in the game. But Orlando did not make it easy just because they couldn't get their attacking players involved quickly enough.
No, yeah, definitely. Which is kind of the theme of this season. So we get the goal. Or so, to be fair, we were slating him, but like, that's a really good turn, really good shot, really good goal. Mm-hmm. So like, props to him for starting that comeback.
He did. I mean, he's a decent player, so he's not a terrible footballer.
No.
I just think for the role that he needs to, he plays in the team, I'm just not sure that he can do it as well as, you know, we need him to, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all I'm trying to say. If he was playing where Mauricio plays, you know, with the task of just supporting the striker and, you know, maybe helping just to provide a third man run type of thing whenever the wide players get the ball, then I think he would do quite well. But, you know, he's not a 10. You know, he's not going to get the ball and dribble past three or four people and, you know, play a 20-yard through ball for somebody either. So you would be playing a system there that's quite rigid if you had him playing that further forward to begin with.
Yep. Okay. So what did you think about the penalty call? Do you think it was a penalty?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean,
I agree.
It's a tricky one. It's like, it's one of those that you're like, you can't 100% say no. You can't 100% say yes either, but I think you give the benefit of the doubt to the attacking player. I've always believed that in football, even before they brought VAR in and tried to change the handball rule to where, you know, if your granddad three generations ago touched the ball with his hand in a game, then you're going to get a penalty now, which is how it seems to be going with these rules.
I can't stand the handball rule now.
It's ridiculous.
I can't stand
it. It's ridiculous. It's just stupid. It's just added so much confusion. And, you know, this illusion of bias and prejudice, where the truth of the matter is that it's just become so bloody subjective that you can't come up with a definitive rule anymore.
It's different game to game.
Yeah, so like, I'll lean on that. I'll say, yes, it should have been a penalty. I think if you're in the box and your hand moves and the ball hits and it's anywhere near, then yes, it's a penalty. That's it. There's no further discussion. You know,
I agree. I think I think handball is way too, like, people's hands are moving at such a quick, you know, pace, and then the ball's moving at such a quick pace, and just like, personally, I think they should be indirect free kicks in the box. Like, I don't think they should be penalties, because a penalty is a goal. Like, what is the stat? 80% of the time, like, you're giving the team a massive opportunity to get on the score sheet, and this is a low scoring sport. Like that penalty puts us into the playoffs and puts Columbus out of the playoffs, and so like, and we weren't like bearing, like, he wasn't stopping a shot from going in all honesty. Like, the ball just kind of hits his hand, and all of a sudden, we're scoring a goal. Like, that doesn't seem fair to me. Like, I'll take it. Like, it got us into the playoffs. Like, that's the rules. Yeah. Sucks for you, Columbus. But like, and we've had our, I said this last time, we've had our fair share of BS handball calls this season. Mm. But like, at a high level, I think that's ridiculous that something that soft turns into a goal for the opposition. I think that rule needs to be looked at. It won't, but
I think, honestly, if your arm is parallel with the rest of your body, like in the front, and it hits the hand, it should not be ruled a handball, because you can't get out of the way, you know. But if you're like a one-armed scarecrow and you've got your arm out to the side and the ball hits it, then that's an argument for a penalty for sure. Because if the ball's going past you and your arm stops it, then yeah, for sure, that's definitely stopping something from happening. But I wish there was
I guess that's fair.
That would be fair, because if you're still in front of the goal and your right arm's out and something hits your arm, you can always make the argument then the ball was going past you and you stopped it, you know? But if it's going to hit you in the knackers and you put your hand there to protect yourself and it hits your hand, is that a handball?
No.
Of course not. Yeah, the instinctive
if you're reactions. Schlegel, it is.
Again, it's just stupid. Like, you just, I don't know. I'm just guessing these referees have never been hit in the knackers before. Oh, they haven't got any knackers. It's one of the two.
Oh, they definitely don't.
Because if you have knackers and you've been hit there, then trust me, you know when to protect them. You have to do. You've no choice.
Every day of your life.
I really wish that they would pay more attention to simulation than handball.
Yes.
I think simulation is where they need to start, like, making some of these intricate rules and start punishing players. I think if you simulation, you should be a card and you should have to leave the game for 5 minutes or something like that. They need to do something tangible so that it stops happening. Because, or even stop the clock for the time wasting. We've had this discussion with Leeds. Jesse Marsh has said it, that time wasting is ruining the game and the simulation is ruining the game. And I think he suggested that they should stop the clock now whenever it happens, so that way teams will stop doing it.
There was good discourse about those kind of discussions a few years ago. I remember seeing some stats where, like, soccer games now, the ball's only in play for like 35 minutes or something like that on average. 35 or 40 minutes, the ball's in play, and at like the top level of the Premier League and in Europe overall. Yeah, the ball's obviously not going to be in play for 90 minutes, but like 35, 40 minutes.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I've seen discussions like that as well, where some of the NFL shills will come in and start saying that whatever it is about football, but 35 minutes and half a game is still about 3 years worth of NFL still for some teams. So I will throw that out there.
Yeah,
we still get more ball time than you do. For sure.
It's funny. Fair enough. All right. So what are your thoughts on Facundo Torres stepping up yet again in a big moment and rising to the occasion?
My thoughts are that he's going to make $25 million for Orlando probably very soon.
You think it's that high? So that was my next question. What
right
price
now,
would you accept for him?
I think 25 is what he would probably command. I mean,
really?
I think so, because you're not just buying a decent player, you're buying upside. He hasn't just got talent as Torres. He's got work ethic. He's got
mentality.
He's got the mentality. Like, I'm sure if we sat here, we could think of a ton of talented players that eventually did not do as much. Like, I'll even go as far to say as players like came from MLS originally, like maybe like Landon Donovan, people like that, who were very similar types of players, didn't do too well when they left. And you would have to argue that the mentality maybe wasn't quite there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that with Torres. I think wherever he goes, as long as he's given an opportunity to play, I think he'll do really well. He reminds me a lot of of Almiron in the way he plays. But
I was about to say Almiron is a good example.
To be fair to Almiron, I mean, he struggled in the first year he left MLS, but he's really starting to come into his own now because he's got a coach that's given him the time to do it.
And yeah, like getting out.
Facundo, I mean, if he gets that right type of coach and the right type of club, and then when I say the right type of club, I'm not saying go to Liverpool, Chelsea or somewhere. You need to go somewhere where you're going to play, you know, and if he gets that type of move, I think he would do really well. And that 25 million, it will be worth 50 to 60 for somebody else later, and a nice little sell-on clause for Orlando as well.
I would have liked him at Brighton when they had Potter still.
Yeah. That's the perfect type of move for him.
Because he would play. Mm-hmm. You know, he might not start every game, but he would play. And, like, they're just such a well-run club.
Yeah.
And the style of play would have fit him. They struggled to score goals, so he would have been... You know, he would have had a chance to insert himself into that team and help with those issues. I just don't see $25 million being put down on him.
I only say that because of his age.
Mm-hmm. He's what, 22?
If it was 26-27, then you know, we're probably at like 18-20 at the most. But I think 25, when you think of inflation, you think of how much money there is, especially in the Premier League. 25 is really not a lot of money for a Premier League team right now. That's a squad player signing.
So it's not a lot of money for Premier League. You're right. They can afford it, but they won't do it for an MLS player.
Yeah, but when you factor in how a lot of teams pay for players nowadays, they don't actually pay the fee up front. They pay like usually over the length of the contract. So let's say he goes to Brighton, using your example, and he gets a 4-year deal. It's only costing the club $6 million a year, and then, you know, whatever it is in his salary. I mean, that's a drop in the ocean for him, honestly.
Yeah. Because they get so much TV revenue, and the way Brighton are playing, they're probably going to be in Europe next year.
That's right, and it's not inconceivable that a club will come in and pay that for him, you know, and Orlando would be very foolish to turn that down, you know. Even if it was 20 plus a sell-on clause, I mean, you would have to think they would consider it.
Yep. Okay, you said something really interesting, and we may have already touched on this, but on Twitter today, and you said great coaches make good players better. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to hear you expand on those thoughts. Maybe why you made that kind of quote on your Twitter account, and how do you think it applies to Orlando City, if at all?
Well, the reference I was making was to Matt Turner at Arsenal. And I know quite a lot of Arsenal fans, which, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad, but
it's a good thing.
I've grown to learn to live with, you know, like, so listen, I used to know a lot of Liverpool fans, so I suppose this is an upgrade. Okay.
Yes. Arsenal fans are classy.
You know, so I was looking at Matt Turner because he's, you know, he's in his upper 20s now. He's like 27 years old. And, you know, he's, in my opinion, he's the best goalkeeper for the US men's national team. You know, I think he's proven it with consistency over the years. He's played plenty of games. But I also remember seeing a lot of comments about him thinking, well, you know, a lot of people point to the fact that he came through football like the old-fashioned way. He didn't come through the draft. He just basically, you know, ended up getting into New England and gradually getting into games, you know, and eventually playing so well that he got his move to Arsenal. And I saw some comment, and I can't honestly remember who it was that wrote it, but they were just commenting on how much Turner's improved. And from the other discourse I've been picking up, how his ball distribution's gotten better, even at 27, 28 years old. He's learning new things. And, you know, Mikel Arteta's doing a great job at Arsenal right now. He had a really rocky start, like where fans were wanting him out, I think, after a few months. Now he's got an entire group of players all bought into his philosophy. And what my comment was kind of alluding towards was that, number one, a player like Turner, who comes from a distinctively different football culture, can still come to a league like the Premier League and start learning to the point where he's, you know, he could be lining up in the Premier League any day now if something happens to your number one goalkeeper. You know, and he's ready, and the club obviously think he's ready because he's involved. But secondly, I saw some comments from, I think it was from Kieran Turner the other day, where in the last game, I think you guys switched your fullbacks around. And you had your left footed player on the right and the right on the left.
And we started our right back at left back against Liverpool. Ben White, you know him very well, has been playing right back for us, and he's been freaking outstanding. But Tomiyasu was the right back, and he plays left center back for Japan international team. So he kind of knows that left side well.
Well, what impressed me, right, is that Tierney said in an interview, because he was asked about this particular tactical change, and his answer was great. It was like, oh, I need to get back. It wasn't like, oh, I need to get back in the first 11 and prove I belong at the club and all that, you know, predisposed, you know, planned sort of quotes that you tend to hear. But it was more like, I know this is nothing personal, but are nothing to do with how I played, but it's how the coach wants to set us up tactically. And the fact that Arteta has got these players not only playing out of their skin right now, but they're all bought into how he wants to play. It's just testament to him. And I was really referencing Arteta. Like, I think he's improving these players of all ages. Granit Xhaka is another one. I think 2 years ago, Granit Xhaka was like, you know, he was at the lowest ebb of his career at one point, I think.
He was the villain.
He was a villain. Like, his own fans were booing him off the pitch.
And he was telling them to F off.
And now he's like a key player again. And yeah, you've just got this mentality right now. This coach is turning these players and making them go up a level or two. So you asked me, does it relate to Orlando? And I mean, I don't think it does, not in a great sense. I mean, the best players at the club, I mean, Torres was purchased and came in pretty much as the best player. Daryl DK is a super draft pick, you know, and I'm not sure how much Oscar had really in his development, you know, because DK wasn't around for very long either. So it's just, I don't think he's really improved that many players. Like, you don't really ever hear many interviews from the players telling you how bought in they are or whatever else. And we don't see the style of play in the field, and we certainly don't see many players. I think, if anything, some players have regressed. Benjamin Schell's got, I think, one goal all season. Am I correct?
I think in the league, yeah. He had a couple in the Open Cup, I want to say. No, he had one in the semi-final.
He was somebody that, you know, I think 2 years ago, you looked at Benji and you thought, you know, this guy could get us 10 to 15 goals if he's developed properly.
As he develops and improves as a player. Right. He starts to project.
Yeah, Tesho's got 4 goals, I think. And most of those came towards the end of the season.
Hey, Tesho's the only reason we got playoffs.
Yeah. Well, his goals were crucial. I mean, and no. Yeah. That's no hardship towards Tesho, but I think it took him literally 20 games to get his first.
Yeah, it did.
So you would say that there's a lot of regression. Mauricio, to me, does not look as influential as he once was.
Yeah, but he's old.
You can either, as a good coach, would a good coach maybe find a different position for him, a different way to get more out of him? You know, you're paying him a lot of money to be there. He's not really doing it, so... not in the second
I do half. Think we have to stop with the old DPs.
I agree. I think
get young DPs and then you get old players on TAM deals or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't gotten the best out of Erkenkari yet. You know, he's not found a way to fully put him in the team where you feel confident that he's happy and at his best. After 3 years, one still can't cross the ball. Honestly, one's like Napoleon Dynamite. Like, he's just never ever gonna become less awkward, or, you know, like, or whatever. There's just no change, you know. Like, he's just gonna be constantly awkward and looked at as the same person that's always there. Like, and I like one. I mean, I think he works hard enough, but he's not that great going forward, and he's not. I don't think he's particularly great defensively either. I just think his speed gets him out of trouble a lot.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
You know, and he's not even the fastest rated player in FIFA anymore, so there you go. Screw that. Schlegel. I thought Schlegel looked good when he first signed. Well, you and I went to the first game, actually, Schlegel played against Montreal in the preseason, if you remember.
I do. And he looked pretty good.
He looked good. I thought to myself, hang on a second. Instead of him backing up Janssen, maybe he'll actually be instead of Janssen. Because he looked so good. And yeah, now he looks like a nutcase. Like, he could play a good game for like 70, 80 minutes and then he'll just do something completely stupid or mistimed and he'll give up a goal because of it.
He's just so at the ends of each spectrum. He's either really good for a game. Like, I thought he was really good in the Toronto match. Like, there were a couple of times where Toronto were in decent positions and he just snuffed it out. Like, nothing was getting past him that day. A big part of the reason we won that game, in my opinion. And then there's games where, like, I don't remember the exact game, but...
Miami. He kind of just lost his positioning, didn't he?
Well, Miami's one of them, but it wasn't even that one. I remember that moment. But there was one game where he just like watched someone run past him. It was the Seattle game, actually. It was the second goal in the Seattle game. And he's in the box and the player just runs past him and he looks like he just stops running. And like, I get you don't want to give up a penalty, but like, it was so weird. And it's like, Schlegel, what are you doing? Like, you can't just stop defending in the box. And they scored off of it. Luckily, we win that game. But like, it was just he's had such a weird season this year. But I see what you're saying. Just kind of
like some people were making the case like he's the best backup centre back in MLS.
No,
and I'm just like, how do you even quantify best backup? Like, what's the criteria for best backup? You know what I mean? Because a backup is a very subjective term. It's not something that you can put a definitive criteria to and say, oh yeah, that's the best backup there is.
For me, best backup is someone that I would feel comfortable interchangeably starting with my
Your best backup starting is someone, center backs. Exactly, your best backup is the guy that you can speak to on the morning of the game because your regular starter's got, you know, a stomach flu or something, and so you need to play today, and you go in and you notice no difference in the how the team would perform.
And that's just not the case, unfortunately, with Schlegel.
Exactly. That's your best backup, so there you go.
Yep. Now, with your tweet, I do think it kind of folds into Orlando City because we aren't seeing that progression. Benji was a really good example that also came to my mind when I read it. Like, over the past few years, you would think he would have progressed. He would have scored goals. We would have found a position for him. Instead, he's playing defensive winger, and we're not using him properly. And he just isn't impacting the team positively in much any way other than when he comes off the bench to play striker. That's the best role for him at the moment this season. I want him to start at striker against Montreal in the playoffs because I think his kind of profile is what we need in that game. He won't. Kara will start that game and he will hopefully get a couple goals for us and we'll win that game. I don't see that happening. But Benji is just a great example of someone who like hasn't really improved. And I don't think we've seen a lot of individual improvement from players. Just like as a team, we haven't seen a team-wide improvement in terms of style of play, results on the pitch, that sort of thing. So just when it comes to coaches, that's also something that I personally prefer is I want to see some sort of progression. I want to see a pathway forward. You know, Austin, they could see a pathway forward even when they were struggling under Wolf. And now they're second place this season. Cincinnati fans, you know, Pat Noonan, they see a pathway forward. Heck, Miami sees a pathway forward. And Miami are going to be a juggernaut in a couple of years. I've been saying that all season. I said it early on. Chris Henderson's a very smart man. And he got a young squad in. And they have this little transfer ban. They got one more season of it. They made the playoffs this year. They finished above us this year. And once they can spend again, they've got the right man to spend. They're going to be really, really good. Well, so like they have something to look forward to. What do we have to look forward to?
Well, yeah, Miami's got that new stadium coming as well.
Yeah.
And they're going to
talk more on the pitch.
No, but the stadium's a big part of it because that's, you know, as far as creating a mentality and a culture, your stadium is a big part of that. You know, it's, and that's why you've got to treat it with respect. You've got to look after it and you've got to, you've got to build a reputation there. But they have so much. I mean, you know, Miami as a lifestyle as well to a celebrity footballer is going to be quite appealing as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the reason why LA Galaxy, despite, you know, struggling and never really being able to show any consistency, they can still attract all these big names.
LA.
It's a lifestyle, you know, and I don't think Orlando, you know, I don't think the finest sights of OBT and being stuck in traffic on I-4 are going to compete with that. You know, so
hey, LA has traffic too.
It does, but they don't have to be in it because they couldn't afford a helicopter to fly over it.
That's true. Well, yeah. So. But what I'm getting at there is what do we have to look forward to? Right. We have we what we're looking forward to is games on the margins where we're struggling to win. And if things go our way, then we are happy. And if things don't go our way, we are sad. And it's very up in the air each game. And that's why we finished with such an up and down record in seventh, dead middle in the league, because that's kind of where we are as a club right now. We're a very mid-level club right now. And I personally want better. I'm not going to say Oscar Pereja needs to leave. He's awful. Get him out of my club. I'm not one of those people. But if he were to leave, like, once we get dumped out of the playoffs, because we will, then I'm not super against the decision either.
But it's all about the succession plan, isn't it? I mean, if you've got somebody that's willing to come that can give you better, I mean, then you've got to, you know, that's got to be a factor, of course. So I'm not actively Oscar out. I'm frustrated with performances, but I'm not an Oscar out person. I mean,
right,
it would be ignorant to want him out, you know, because I think with what he has, he's still gotten a degree of success, you know. But I feel like the pressure now is on him to really, he's got to take the club to another level now in terms of style. And you know, they've got to support whoever the coach is with some more signings. I mean, just looked at the bench again for the Columbus game, and you know, I'd forgotten that they'd signed Nico Giacchini. I don't know, like, what his role is anymore. You know, like,
yeah,
poor lad's come over here. He's barely had, you know, I'm a big believer that you've got to put people in a position to succeed. He's not really had his chance, you know. So that's just another thing. You know, the squad needs some work for sure. And he doesn't just need players to fill the bench. I don't like those people that say, well, oh yeah, we have depth now. Depth's only good if it's actually good, if it's actually useful. You know?
Yeah. I'm gonna keep my mouth shut on Giacchini.
Yeah.
So. Well, let's focus on playoffs.
Yeah.
How do you think the game's gonna go?
I think Orlando might actually win it, to be honest.
What?
I'm not going to say they will win, but I'm going to say that I think they'll have a chance to. If they can defend, if they can keep the door shut, I just got this feeling they can get a goal. It'll be Torres that'll be the source of it somewhere.
Somehow.
Because I think Montreal are a tricky team. I've seen some of their fans, and Montreal have been really good this season. I mean, but in a weird way, I'm happy that it's Montreal and not Cincinnati or Miami. At the plane, because Cincinnati in particular, I think, will destroy Orlando as far as, you know, attacking them, scoring. I think Cincinnati will just go to town, you know, and they'll put a few goals past Orlando. I don't know if Montreal can do that. I think Montreal's kind of like, they could get one goal and then probably shut up shop and win. But if they go a goal behind, I'm just not sure Montreal would be able to break down Orlando, especially given Orlando's record on the road is quite good this year. So, you know, it's one of those weird things, you know?
It very well could happen. I'm very not confident. I've been really impressed with Montreal this year.
Oh, they've been good. It's just that it reminds me somewhat of, you know, Montreal kind of remind me a little bit just of New England and Philadelphia, like after they've done really well during the regular season, and then they get the playoff game and they just fold a little bit, you know.
Yeah, but the weird thing is there's not this like massive break. Usually there's like a big break between end of season and playoffs.
That's true.
But this is just like next week. It might as well be another regular season game.
No, and that's actually fair, because you know, like those other teams, like they were getting like 3 weeks off, I think, and that really
they're struggling.
Yeah, really disrupts your rhythm as a team. Like you know, you've got to keep your players switched on and sharp, and it's kind of hard to do that when you don't have a game. And, you know, no, friendlies don't really match the intensity that you're going to need in a playoff game. So
right.
I suppose it is a good thing that, you know, the games are a little quicker, but I'm not terribly confident, but I just think that it's not a foregone conclusion Orlando's going to lose either. So it really depends on how Orlando turn up. If it's the Orlando that showed up in Miami, then the game will be over in 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. You know? My prediction is we lose this game.
No, and you could probably, yeah. You know, statistically, I can see why you'd say it. I just, you know, I know how Sod's Law works. You know, Murphy's Law is what you call it here.
And yeah.
That just tends to be, you get the odd result sometimes that happens like that.
Yep. All right. Last kind of interesting thing. This was, we had a couple of listener questions regarding this topic, but what kind of big name purchase this season would you want to see in terms of profile? You don't have to have a name for me, but what are some of the attributes that you want a big name player coming in to have? And then what position do you want us to fill with a kind of big signing this offseason?
Okay, that's a good question. I want two signings.
Oh, greedy.
Okay, I want three signings. Three signings.
Oh, very greedy.
I want three signings, and this is what I'd want. All three of them have got to be under 30. 25 to 27, ideally. And I want a centre-back who can start. A starting quality one. I want a two-way number eight midfielder who can play with his back to the ball and also playing forward. And I want a striker. And that striker has to be someone that the current team values and that is mobile and that can play off the shoulder of a defender and that is very good on the ball, like as far as technique, first touch. As far as names go, I don't have any particular names. I could probably, if I thought about this prior, I would probably have had some names.
Right.
But
that's why I just said attributes.
But there's players to be found. I mean, it's unrealistic to go off and get another team starter unless you're looking maybe in Scandinavia or in South or Central America. But the player you want has to be someone that's had some kind of international recognition, I think. And that has shown at some point in their career they can score, you know. That's got to be what you're looking for. We've got to stop taking chances on players. And just buy somebody, just get someone. Even if they're better than what you've got to get them, you know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I feel like the discourse is. I see on Twitter a lot, some people are very loyal to certain players. Like, they're scared of getting someone in that's better than that player.
Yeah. And
I don't understand that. I think, like,
always get the better player. Always
got to get the better player. I don't care.
If we can find someone better than Facundo Torres, get him in.
I don't care if Cal Smith saw you in Publix and, you know, helped you get the last, you know, buy one, get one on some yogurts or something and took a picture with you afterwards. If you find someone better than Cal Smith, you've got to sign him, right?
Yeah.
If you find a starting right back that can finally solve this issue, who's better, Juan or Cal Smith? The answer needs to be C, which is neither, and somebody else. You know, I took that one from Eddie, by the way.
Joe Scally.
There you go. Joe Scally becomes available. Of course, you take him in a heartbeat.
Right.
You know, similar.
Pretty easy.
Yeah. So you've always got to try and improve what you have. And this loyalty towards some players, I understand it because you do build a bond with certain players. But to say to someone, you want these players out, you're not a real fan, you're not supporting the players. Well, no, I just want my team to do better. Does that make
sense? And those players don't have to leave.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about possibilities of 40 plus games in a season.
Yeah.
Well, instead of starting, you know, Juan every game and having to take him out at the 70th minute because he's gassed, you can start this other guy and then substitute him out with Juan and start Juan in games and switch up your tactics some games. And there's just, I don't get why people are so scared of like bringing in better players.
Yeah, it's like,
because they don't want to, I don't know what it is. They like the current bunch. Yeah, you can like your current players, but like can't be afraid of improving.
Well, no, and I mean, if you look at the subs bench from the last game, I mean, how many of those players realistically do you see as being starters? Like, I mean, Cartagena maybe is the only one on the bench right there that you would say could come into the team and there wouldn't be a drop in performance, you know?
Let me pull it up.
Yeah.
Oh, click the wrong game here. Maybe I need some IT. The bench. Someone coming in to start, and we would see no negative impact. Sheesh.
Exactly.
I think we'd see a positive impact with Benji at striker.
Right, but on a starting
But on the wing? No.
And then again, so we have to factor in how would the coach use the players he has. If he gave Benji a run at striker for, let's just say he says to Benji, look, I'm going to give you 5 games unconditionally, and you're going to play those 5 up front, then I'm pretty confident that he would actually grow into that and probably get a couple goals.
I mean, he had a run earlier this year after the semifinal of the Open Cup. And I want to say he played well, but we didn't win games.
Yeah, but he played and he stretched the opponent and he
probably created space.
So
it was the DC United game where we dominated but lost after 290 plus whatever minute goals. Yeah. We got killed against New England at home, lost 3-0.
Yeah.
And then he started the win over Red Bulls away from home that kicked off our win streak.
Mm-hmm.
Before Kara came back in on the road against Charlotte in the 2-1 win. So Benji started 4 games in a row at striker, and we won 2 of them. Both of those wins were against the Red Bulls, mm-hmm. and we lost 2 of them.
Okay.
So. But I do agree that, like, you give him a clean slate, 5 games in a row. I mean, I thought we looked really good against DC, to be fair, with him at striker. And yeah, I think he was a big part of that.
So. Yeah, they weren't terrible, you know what I mean? Like, but, you know, I'm big on putting players in a position to succeed. And whether that would happen with Benji, I just don't know. You know, but looking at the rest of the bench, I just don't see a great improvement on what is out there in the 11, you know? That's only going to be more of an issue next year when there's more games. So they've got to sign it. I'd be looking to improve the entire spine of the team. That's the short answer to the very long explanation to the very decent question by whoever the listener was.
Yeah. All right. Well, I said we wouldn't take that long tonight, and we've ended up going 80 minutes.
That's all right.
What's new? Yeah, good conversation. Hopefully you guys, the listeners, enjoyed Daniel's takes on some of the same questions.
Yeah, hopefully.
I know, I certainly did.
Hopefully you guys enjoy it. I mean, I know there's a couple of people out there tracking things I tweet, and will happily remind you of things I've said that are bad about Orlando.
They've got like a spreadsheet going.
They've got like a tracker or something, like a good behavior spreadsheet of when I've said good things and when I've said bad things. You know, God bless them. You know, I think life must be so fulfilling for those people, right?
You've been a very naughty boy recently. Oh,
I've been a terrible boy. I point out things that could be better, and I condemn.
And you want it to be better.
I want it to be better, and yeah. But I'm obviously not a real fan, of course. So.
Nah. Well, where can the people who aren't stalking you find you at?
Well, the ones that were stalking me, I blocked them, so they can't find me. So when they make their burner accounts, which are usually, you know, I think there was probably a burner account, you know, called, you know, like Swedish Girl Finder was one of them. Sheep Lovers was another one. In Denial 2022 was another account, I think.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. And Deluded Forever with a 4 was the other account. But those accounts, they can't find me anymore. But anyone that does want to listen, and I'm happy to talk to anybody about football, you should know that by now, can find me. And I've changed my Twitter handle. It's BeelzeBall4141.
Oh. Yeah. You're elusive.
I'm elusive now.
I wouldn't have known that.
I'm a Bielsa fan as always, but 4-1-4-1. It's my favourite formation. It's not my pin number, it's my credit card. So if you're thinking of robbing me after you've stalked me on Twitter and you want to rob me, you're not gonna get any money. So don't even try.
I love it.
I will shame you. And anybody that comes after me next time, I'll shame them then.
Those are some fighting words, Daniel. Well, don't piss Daniel off. That's the moral of the story, basically.
Don't come at me with your virtue signaling bullshit about making the world a better place and then simultaneously going around being a dick to everybody that disagrees with you, basically.
I think that's well said.
I think that's very fair, right?
Yeah.
I have a big problem with virtue signalers, you know, and they do who they are. And I'll tell you this now, as someone who's been on the end of it, and I know, Gavin, you've gotten it in the past, I think there's scope out there for people to just be a lot happier. And if being a lot happier means deleting Twitter off your phone and going outside, maybe touching some grass once in a while. Not the type of grass you like to sit and smoke, but the type of grass that, you know, you can walk on and that represents in your mind being outside and around something else. Then I suggest you go do it, because abusing people online, condemning their support. I'll tell you something about my support. In 2020, I didn't get to go to the first game of the season. I was out working. I was very much looking forward to going to the Chicago game, which was the next home game. And as you know, the day before, it was cancelled. The season was then cancelled. I had a balance of $2,500 on my season tickets that year. And when I found out that the season was off, the first thought that came to my mind was not, how am I going to get my money back? Me, being the decent person that I try to be, was thinking, well, a lot of people could lose their jobs because of COVID. I called the ticket office that day, being the horrible fan that I am, and I paid my balance off in full, knowing full well I probably wasn't going to get to a game that year.
Oh, what a horrible fan.
And be it as it may, I don't think I actually got to a game that year until Nashville. And I was in Nashville. I went with you, Gavin, to the playoffs that year, twice.
We went to the last home game of the season as well, the Nashville game.
Okay, so we did go to Nashville. So.
And then we went to the two playoff games.
Those were the only times in 2020, Gavin, that I actually got to go to a game.
Wow.
I paid my seats off in advance because my mind thought to myself, if I'm doing my little bit by helping this club keep people employed during a time of uncertainty, and I'll tell you now, COVID was not kind to my business either. But I did it because I cared about the club, I cared about the people that work for it, and I wanted to do my bit.
What a horrible thing.
If anybody dares question my support, that's going to be something I'll always point towards, because I know a lot of people used it as an excuse to get the money back.
Right.
And I think attendance has kind of showed that.
And, you know, some
people genuinely
need your money.
That's
right.
Fine. You need your money.
It's a lot of money. Fine.
I made a choice to pay mine. And I'm not saying I'm a better person for doing that than anybody else.
That's just how you showed your support.
That's how I showed my support. And it certainly does not make me a worse fan just because I point out that the club should not be spying on other teams, or that I'm not happy with the performances of certain players. Doesn't mean I need some dick going around counting how many tweets I've said something nice or not nice about Orlando City. You know, that's just ridiculous. And I've seen you come at the end of this as well, and I think it's unfair. You know, we all have opinions, and unless you're out there calling somebody names or spreading something that's libelous, then you don't deserve to be targeted like that. And I think online bullying and harassment is not only wrong, but it's just pathetic and it's weak. And we all know that if you were stood face to face with those people, you wouldn't dare say the things you say online. So do yourself a favour, go outside, get some fresh air, and put yourself in the position of the person you're speaking to. If that person's having a bad day, you might just push them over the edge one day. You need to be really kind and be more careful about how you treat people. I've always been an advocate for mental health awareness, and that's no different. It's one of the reasons why my relationship with this club is fractured, because I'll just look at the way people treat other people. And it's allowed to go on, and it's disgusting. So that's my message. And if anyone wants to elaborate or speak to me on that, they're more than welcome to.
Per usual, well said, Daniel. Appreciate you hopping on, having a good discussion with me.
This has been good. thank you, guys. Yeah. I'm looking forward to, you know, I regret that I can't get on as often as I used to do, but, you know, we get these weekend ones. This might be more doable for us as well.
Yeah, Mondays was not the best day this year for us come the end of the season.
It's horrible, and, you know, I have pretty much 5 a.m. starts all day, every day, so not the weekends, but through the week, it's just tough to, right. to at the end of a 16-hour day to talk. I just want to be able to give my best to anybody that wants to listen to me, you know?
So. Yeah. Makes sense. We'll have to figure out the schedule for next year and mm-hmm. off season certainly. Well, you already said where people can listen to you out. Have a good rest of your night, my friend.
Yep. Thank you, Gavin.
Thank you.
Man in MLS comes up huge!